I've reported other people's stories for a long time, confronting people in power. But behind this broadcast voice, I've hidden my greatest secret. I was in an abusive marriage. It lasted a year, but it changed my life. Part of me always blamed myself for what happened, and I've lived with the shame. So many of us live like this. It's time we change that. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. Welcome to Paradise is My Story. Available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Oh, and you're hearing everything on the monitor. Yeah. Okay, this is
How's
great.
This? Better?
Yeah,
can you
good.
Are
yeah.
you?
Okay. Yeah,
good.
He's here too. Yeah.
So, what you're hearing here is me in a deserted New York hotel bar setting up for an interview I've been trying to land for years. It's a bit awkward.
Yeah, good. Do you want me to hold one of them?
No, yeah, because I say
there's a lot going on here, and I just
no, I know it's okay. I'll do it.
Our sound engineer Will is double fisting microphones as five of us all huddle around a little coffee table in the corner of the room.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I'll do my
best.
And
we're good. Yeah. Is that good? Do you want me to?
Yeah. Do you want to lean in?
Squish.
Yeah.
Me, Will, and the owners of Pornhub. Will, let me know when you're set up. You're good. You've been recording.
Yeah.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Sorry. Okay, well, I think we'll just get started with introductions. I'm Samantha Cole, and this is episode 4, The Pornhub Empire, Understood. Actually, I think we should back up here, because these are Pornhub's new owners. A lot has happened in the roughly 3 years since that New York Times op-ed shattered the site's public image. More lawsuits were launched against the company about non-consensual imagery on the site, and revenues dropped. The CEO and COO, Firas Antoun and David Tisillo, minority shareholders who had run MindGeek from Montreal for years, testified before a Canadian parliamentary committee in early 2021.
That is a different incident. And I
okay,
and I,
you
I
know, this is the issue here is no, children. The issue here,
I
let me
that.
Finish. This is about children and whether crime. You're not letting me ask the question.
You
my
asked
question
and I
is,
just wasn't given a chance to reply.
My
to it
question is,
you asked.
A few months later, Antoun's 21-room mansion was torched and burned to the ground. The arson remains unsolved. Antoun and Tisillo resigned a year after that. What else? MasterCard and Visa still won't process Pornhub transactions. They cut ties with MindGeek's advertising arm, too. Though not with the scripted pay sites like Brazzers. And anti-Pornhub campaigners continue to pummel the company. In early 2023, Pornhub, along with the rest of the business, was sold to new owners, who changed the name from MindGeek to Alo. These new owners are a private equity group based in Ottawa. They call themselves Ethical Capital Partners. I've tried to get the old leadership to talk to me many times, but the company always seemed more interested in sending out their cheeky press releases and less interested in actually answering tough questions about their business. So I was a bit surprised when these new owners agreed to an interview. And that brings us back to that empty New York hotel bar.
Having to go through multiple secret doors to get here. That's good.
Where I sat down with three executives for an hour, on the record, this past November. I wanted to know what they were doing to make the site safer. And in the context of a massive public relations crisis, multiple lawsuits, and credit card companies that have pulled out and stayed out, why they even wanted to be involved with this embattled porn company in the first place. So I guess the question that I think a lot of people were wondering, including myself, is why?
Sure. So, you know, first, there's a pragmatic answer. And that is, it was the challenges that made the company available for acquisition. Okay. Obviously, prior to that, the company was not available for acquisition. The larger answer, I think, really has to do with who ECP is as a group.
That's Solomon Friedman, the vice president of compliance at Ethical Capital Partners. He's a criminal defense lawyer, and according to his bio on the ECP website, he's ordained in rabbinical studies.
The company really hadn't. Our backgrounds don't reflect traditional private equity. Rather, what we bring to the table are, you know, abilities from everything from legal on my side. We have law enforcement, senior law enforcement experience, public engagement, obviously.
When he says the partners have senior law enforcement expertise, he's referring to Derek Ogden, a retired chief superintendent with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. VP Sarah Bain's public engagement experience includes a stint as the director of communications for the Liberal Party of Canada. You'll hear from her in a moment, after Solomon.
Our partner Sarah Bain, we brought something very unique to the table. And along with that came this thesis, which is by bringing this company into the public sphere, by engaging transparently, by engaging with government and stakeholders and media in a way that the company really hadn't, we had this opportunity to do what we saw was the most important mission here, which is to bridge that huge gap between the truth and public perception. Because our review of the company determined that there is this massive distance between the two. And what we found when we looked under the hood, as a private equity company would when exploring an investment, we found a company that actually had trust and safety at the heart of everything it does and had some of the most advanced trust and safety and moderation procedures and people who were really committed to doing that work. But that was not the story that was being reflected to the public. That wasn't a story the company was telling. It wasn't a story that was being communicated to stakeholders. And we saw an ability to do that. So it was that opportunity and our ability, we thought, to engage publicly and to be very open and proud about the work we're doing. That's part of our mission with the investment.
I'd add that as an industry, the adult industry is a sound investment. We thought when we did our research into the companies, it's a great company. The staff, the team members, the management team, they're at the highest level of this industry. So investment-wise, this was a good investment for us. What we were challenged with was how do we take a company that we really believe in, how do we take that, the knowledge that we have, and now make sure that the world knows it so that we can turn this around.
Solomon and Sarah both sounded so confident that Pornhub was this model corporate citizen and that the public just didn't understand. But I wanted to know why anyone who's followed the Pornhub story should trust Pornhub now. Yeah, I'd like to kind of dig in a little bit into the moderation changes that have happened because after Visa and MasterCard pulled out and that whole that opinion piece in the New York Times came out, Pornhub purged a whole lot of unverified uploads from the site. Can you walk me through how that looks today? What does it take to upload something to Pornhub? What does that process look like? And, you know, what is the difference now versus what it was, you know, when it first started?
Yeah, and I'll make, I'm happy to give the overview there. And I'll just make one thing very clear. If the processes that we're talking about now were not in place in March 2023 when ECP acquired the company, we would not have acquired the company. So first of all, in order to have an account where one is able to upload, one needs to be a verified uploader. That verification requires, first of all, an automated liveness and identification check. We use a third-party provider called Yoti. What we require is government issue ID, clear front and back, and then you need to start taking a moving scan of your face. And that ensures that nobody can hold up a photo to a camera and pretend they're a live person when it's not their actual identity. So that system then confirms, is there a match? Do these people look the same? Is it a real person? Do the identifying details in the ID match the identifying details in the account subscription information? Do these match? And if one detail is off, Yoti rejects. And I'll tell you this, if Yoti rejects, it doesn't even make it to a human screener. It is done. You get something back saying we need clearer ID. We're not even taking this to the human level.
I'll just pop in here to say that I tested this out. And it's not easy to get past this first step. I don't know what it was about my ID, but it was not good enough for the automated checker on my first several tries. And Yoti rejected my face scan many times before I finally got through. But if you do make it past this step,
then it goes to our human reviewer. And that human reviewer has full carte blanche to reject. And they look for all kinds of things that might not be apparent. So one of the things that they'll look for is, for example, let's say the ID is Lithuanian, but the person's IP address is in Iceland. Now, you could be traveling when you're making your account, but that's cause for further inquiry. So these are people asking critical questions simply to verify the ID. We haven't got to a single piece of content. And now, people have expressed to us, it's frustrating. It takes a long time for me to be verified. And we're like, you're darn right it does. We're not Facebook. We're not Twitter. We're not just uploading recipes. This is, you know, we take intimate image protection so seriously. You need to be fully verified. And at present, when you're fully verified, you also attest that you hold the ID and information of anyone appearing in your content. Now, if you pass that, we get to content moderation. Okay. Content moderation means at the most basic level, every single piece of content, I don't care if you've been uploading for 3 years, if you have thousands of pieces of content, or this is your very first clip, is going to be watched from beginning to end by a moderator, listened to with a critical eye. That moderator is going to watch it in full, and they are going to accept, reject, or comment back where something needs to change. And that those moderation standards are not just about legality. So for us, I say this, you know, complying with the law is like putting your pants on in the morning. You don't get, you know, credit for it. It's just what you have to do. But we, you know, in our terms of service, we set a much higher standard. So for example, when we look at CSAM, that's child sex abuse material, it's obviously, of course, it's talking about the age of the people depicted, but also, are they being presented as being young? Because if they're being presented as being underage, we treat that like it is actual child sex abuse material. And on the CSAM side, the moment it's flagged as even potential CSAM, we're out of the moderation realm, we're now in the law enforcement realm, and we make an instant report to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, along with, and here's the great thing about the verified uploader, it's not just about verifying the consent and ID of the uploader, it's also about ensuring accountability for the person who's uploading it. You know, I spoke at a large law enforcement conference a couple of weeks ago, and I said, one of the great things about Verified Uploader is that we can give you all this information. So when someone does try to post potential CSAM or someone does try to post material they don't have consent for, you can prosecute and arrest and convict them because we hold their real ID. They never would have gone through the door had they not gone through the Verified Uploader process. Then you have moderation where you're looking for other things, even though it might be, you know, it's fully consensual. Is it a depiction of non-consent? Is it a depiction? We don't allow intoxication, even acting, even depictions of intoxication, depictions of coercion, and anything like that. So that process is one where people have come to us and said it takes too long to get the material approved. And we say, yes, that's what it means to have robust content moderation. But then we have ongoing moderation. Okay? Which is, we have audit teams that are looking for trends or looking for search terms or trying to find places where, once again, moderation can be a judgment call when you get to the sort of margins, right? We draw the line, for example, on violence at something depicting a risk of serious bodily injury or death. What's serious bodily injury? We know it, there's a wide range of, you know, of perfectly healthy, widely practiced kinks. We draw the line there. We, even though it's not illegal to go past there, these are depictions, of course. Hollywood movies have depictions of serious bodily injury and death, even in the sexual context all the time, but that's where we draw the line. So these are ongoing decisions that are being made by both the frontline moderation staff, but then our senior managers who are also examining, you know, how do the policies have to evolve? How is society evolving? And I'll just end with this thought on moderation. You know, it's very easy for in some quarters for people to say, well, A is unacceptable and B is acceptable. When you go back 50, 60 years ago, the debates that the Supreme Court of the United States were having about pornography, and pornography is legal, but obscenity is illegal. And how do you know what's obscene? The Supreme Court tells us, well, you know it when you see it. Okay? That meant that, you know, you apply certain social realities to what kind of content is going to be acceptable. And we don't want to be in the position of being arbiters of taste, right? Instead, we're arbiters of moderation, but these are ongoing conversations. And one of the ECP, you know, one of our main philosophies is these are conversations that have to happen in public. We want to hear from stakeholders. We want to hear from advocacy organizations and government to help us continue to draw those evolving lines. But at its most basic, we take Verified Uploader and you know, moderation at the very, very heart of everything we do.
So that was a long answer about moderation and about what it takes to become verified to upload content onto the site. But people aren't only posting videos of themselves. In early 2024, a little over 3 years after the scandal over sexual abuse material on the site, ALO expanded their verification policy. Now, ALO says it verifies the age and consent of everyone in new scenes, not just the uploader. I talked to John Sheehan at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, NCMEC for short. NCMEC's a nonprofit that combats child exploitation, and it has a tip line where electronic service providers, the public, and victims themselves can report instances of suspected child abuse material. You might have caught Solomon Friedman referencing NCMEC earlier. Pornhub started reporting to its tip line in 2020.
Into the cyber tip line, the volume is not anywhere near where it used to be. That first year when they registered to report into the cyber tip line, I think they submitted close to 13,000 reports in 2020, and it wasn't even a full calendar year. Looking at last year, we had about 2,000 reports that came in from Pornhub. You know, the reporting numbers in themselves are not always a clear indication of the activity that's occurring on the platform. You know, no company is obligated to be actively looking for said content. They have made changes.
John Sheehan told us that NCMEC does still hear directly from victims looking for help to get their material off Pornhub.
So definitely victims and survivors still reach out, and we're still facilitating the notice process. They have made changes. They have certainly tried to improve the process. So it has cleaned up. But just given the size and scope, it's not completely where it could be. And using like OnlyFans as an example of some of the great steps that have been happening.
John mentions OnlyFans here because he told us that NCMEC used to receive complaints about minors on the site, but that OnlyFans committed to eradicating the issue. And now he says those complaints have essentially dried up. OnlyFans told us that among their moderation and verification policies is a requirement that all participants in sexually explicit content on their site independently complete an age and identity verification process. We'll have to wait and see whether Pornhub implementing a similar rule makes a difference. OnlyFans is a very different style of platform than Pornhub. More like Patreon than like YouTube. Content creators upload their own material behind a paywall and earn money off of it from viewer subscriptions or tips. It has had a ton of success in recent years, among performers and audiences alike, leaving me wondering if there's even still a place anymore for the old tube site model on which Pornhub built its fortunes. Here's Solomon again.
And for a very, very long time, you know, Pornhub was called a tube site. We called it a tube site. We talked about tube sites. The era of the tube site, meaning similar to YouTube, is over. It doesn't exist anymore. This is a content sharing platform with verified uploader and full moderation. Now, what that has resulted in my view, from a business perspective, is a safe, trusted, responsible platform. That is one where the community is going to want to share and monetize their content, which means we're going to be the location, the community for sex positive free expression. But it's also what is going to bring the user base. I'm very, very much of the view. And when you look at people who I say are voting with their clicks and their site visits, you know, we're talking about many, many millions of law abiding individuals who are trying to enjoy legal and constitutionally protected content. They want it in a safe environment. They want a place where consent is guaranteed, where compliance, where safety and legality are guaranteed. To me, that's what grows the platform. Trust and safety grow the platform, and they grow the business. And we're talking about other stakeholders. That's what brings the financial institutions. That what one day may bring institutional investors to adult in general, right? And I'll also say,
as you can hear, the new owners of Pornhub know how to talk the talk. The old owners, they barely spoke publicly at all. They kept such a low profile that the majority shareholder's identity was a secret for years. Meanwhile, Ethical Capital Partners' website has their headshots, bios, email addresses for all to see. Sarah and Solomon emphasized to me many times that they want to be open about the work they're doing, that this is a deliberate choice. But the scrutiny can be intense.
And so we as a group, ECP, prior to the acquisition, that was certainly top of mind for us with regards to how public we were going to be in our roles as partners at a private equity firm that owns one of the largest adult entertainment platforms in the world. And so we prepared for that. We did, you know, we personally obviously had to have a lot of conversations with our families, you know, and they're really hard conversations, right? And I've worked in some pretty intense public policy areas, and never have I had to tell my mom and dad what my job was. And I had to hear, you know, yeah, the stigma's, it's real.
I think I'd say about stigma, the realization that, you know, stigma is born of shame, okay? and shame comes because it's been put on you. You know, for us, it was so important that if we were going to do this, we had to be proud of the work that we're doing. And that means, like, that means we can stake out some demarcation lines here, which is, we believe that sex work is work. We believe that it's work that's deserving of dignity, legal protection, of safety and security. We're not ashamed of it. You know, there are many private equity firms can make all kinds of acquisitions and never talk about, are you proud of what your company does? You know, what do you mean am I proud? It's an investment. I invested in it. And maybe there are some companies that they shouldn't be proud of the work that we're doing. We are fundamentally proud of the work that we're doing. We believe that humans have a right to real life and online self-determination. That is the ability to make free choices about what you do with your body and what you do with your life, and to have a safe and secure environment to do that in. We're very proud, both on the sex work side, but also on the trust and safety side, of actually making the internet a safer place. You know, we just don't accept the stigma. We won't live on with it, and we won't allow it to be foisted on us, notwithstanding how nasty and vitriolic the opposition is going to be.
Whatever stigma ethical capital partners may face or reject for their involvement in the adult industry, it's sex workers themselves who are on the front lines. When Visa and MasterCard pulled their services from Pornhub, it didn't just hurt Pornhub's business. It hurt the individual performers on the site, like Vanille.
Jeez, the whole MasterCard thing was insane. Being a creator on that site, I felt there was no reason to really block us from making money straight out the gate and not really give us any other way to go around it. It felt like we were sort of caught in this trap of MasterCard or nothing, which is a very strange and scary concept to wrap my head around, I felt, especially in like during the COVID times. It was very scary, the thought of them not allowing us to make any money at all, ever anymore. Like, I really was thinking, oh my God, is this actually going to be it? Is this going to be the last time I'm ever going to get like a Pornhub payout? And that was horrifying. God.
The sex workers I spoke to right after MasterCard and Visa pulled out in 2020 told me that losing Pornhub as a source of income was devastating and threatened to launch them into more financial precarity than ever. Banking discrimination against legal, consensual adult industry workers didn't start with Pornhub and doesn't end there either. I've talked to sex workers who've had their bank accounts closed without cause, who have faced severe housing and employment discrimination. Many are banned from using payment processors the rest of us take for granted, like PayPal, Cash App, or Venmo. And it seems like every week there's another news headline about a teacher or a cop or a nurse who's been fired for having a porn career outside their day job. There are also very real threats of violence. The discrimination doesn't really surprise Vanille.
I've never been in the impression that things weren't like this, that there hasn't been this crazy loud voice that seems to hate our fucking guts. Even when I was a kid and I grew up in like the deep South, I would just hear the way people spoke, the way things were said. And you knew that there was like this malice, this sort of like cultural, historical malice towards people that enjoyed sex, and that there always has been. And so I instantly was like, oh, they're not going to like this. They're not going to like this whole sex work thing. And they don't. They don't. They despise it. And
I think what Vanille's saying here might help explain the defensiveness you hear in the adult industry in conversations about Pornhub. This is an industry that feels like it's under attack, because it often is. Many of Pornhub's critics insist that they don't mean to go after all porn. They say they are only targeting abuse. But those doing legitimate, consensual sex work say they're the ones who end up getting hurt, and not the actual abusers.
Well, I don't think that you can leave the sex workers out of the equation, especially when you're talking about sex work in general. I think that is kind of where a lot of people mess up. A lot of people sort of slip, is that they do this whole thing where they say, let's just make sex work different and not include the sex workers in the conversation about how this should be different. When it comes to abuse, we have to make sure that people feel heard. We have to make sure that people feel like what happened wasn't in their head, wasn't something that, you know, can ever happen again. And people do have to feel secure in that. And I do think there is a way to have people feel secure in that and not shut an entire site down.
Porn and abuse material are not the same thing, but they're right beside each other in the Pornhub story. The complicated fact is that Pornhub contributed to enormous harm, and that many of those calling it out do so in good faith. But others are also using it as a way to go after sex work as a whole. For some, Pornhub is forever tainted. Nothing the company has done or will do to combat abuse material on the site will ever change that. But because of the company's dominance in the industry and the way it made itself synonymous with porn, the stain can spread beyond just this one business and impact an already marginalized group.
In the 1980s and 90s, New York City needed a tough cop like Detective Louis Scarcella.
Putting bad guys away. There's no feeling like it in the world.
He was the guy who made sure the worst killers were brought to justice.
That's one version.
This guy is a piece of shit.
Derek Hamilton was put away for murder by Detective Scarcella.
In prison, Derek turned himself into the best jailhouse lawyer of his generation.
This is The Burden. Listen to new episodes of The Burden starting March 19th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you go to Pornhub.com today, what you'll see has been uploaded by someone who handed over their ID. And in newer videos, IDs and signed release forms have been submitted for each performer, too. The trust and safety policies will be monitored by an independent third party for 3 years, thanks to the deferred prosecution agreement in the U.S. If you search for terms on Pornhub that could lead to abusive material, like middle school or girls do porn, you'll be blocked by warning pages and directed to different resources, like a helpline run by a child protection nonprofit. You might, in fact, I can pretty much guarantee you will, still see things that you find objectionable. A lot of people find the phenomenon of step-sibling or step-parent porn to be too close to incest for comfort. The fixation on teen or other youth-adjacent categories, like babysitter or schoolgirl, even though role-played by mature performers, might disturb you. So might the roughness of some of the sex. Noelle, the writer who you've heard from throughout the series, thinks that issues that you see in porn are reflections of issues in the real world, rendered more explicit. The way everything is more explicit in porn.
The act of having sex on camera and filming it and other people watching it is inherently neutral. There is nothing inherently violent. There is nothing inherently racist. There is nothing inherently misogynistic about sex being filmed, you know? And that as a base is neutral. But what we're seeing that pornography really just mirrors back the power imbalances that we're seeing kind of every day, but more explicitly, because obviously within pornography, power imbalance is already something that is heightened. So if there's an element of pornography or a porn genre that is questionable, it's not like we can just get rid of that porn genre and then everything will be right in the world. Like it's actually that's a symptom of something that's coming from us as a society. That's a reflection of something that's within us as a society. And pointing the finger at pornography, you're just going to be playing whack-a-mole, because that's still going to be popping up because this is something that is reflective of somebody's desires.
Porn isn't going anywhere. Ancient Greeks and Romans painted frescoes depicting oral sex and orgies. And as for free porn online, I don't think the toothpaste is going back in the tube. If Pornhub shuts down, there's still Xvideos, a site that's neck and neck with Pornhub, often even surpassing Pornhub's traffic. Xvideos doesn't have the same kind of high profile that Pornhub does, and hasn't faced nearly the same level of public scrutiny. We haven't really talked about young people watching porn in this series, but the advent of tube sites like Pornhub made porn way more accessible to everyone, and that includes kids. Older generations might have caught a glimpse of their older brother's friend's Hustler magazine, but now it's as easy as Googling boobs in the privacy of your room. The pop singer Billie Eilish told Howard Stern that she started watching porn when she was 11, and that it really messed up her expectations for sex.
I didn't think it was attractive, and I was a virgin. I'd never done anything, and it led to problems where the first few times I had sex, I was not saying no to things that were not good, and it's because I thought that that's what I was supposed to be attracted to, and...
Senator Julie Mivelle Deschênes, who you heard in the last episode, has sponsored a piece of legislation that attempts to address this. Her bill would make it a criminal offense for a company to expose minors to sexually explicit material. In effect, this would require porn sites to implement some kind of age verification mechanism. Similar bills have passed in Louisiana, Arkansas, Montana, Mississippi, Utah, Virginia, North Carolina, and Texas. But they're really controversial. Because if you're going to verify the age of every person trying to watch porn, realistically, that means every person trying to watch porn might have to show their ID. And that's not an appealing prospect for anyone concerned about their privacy. A judge in Texas even called the law unconstitutional, saying it deters adults' access to legal, sexually explicit material, far beyond the interest of protecting minors. Critics also point out that if the well-regulated porn sites implement age verification mechanisms and other, sketchier porn sites don't, traffic would just migrate over to the sketchier sites. I think young people will still find ways to watch porn, even if age verification laws pass. I mean, porn is all over the internet, including on social media. So I think education is really important. We need to talk to young people about what porn is, what's real, what's not, what's safe and what's not, what consent looks like. Here's Noelle again.
I think that the conversation around media generally and media consumption of any genre, but particularly about pornography at this point, should be on actual like educators and parental figures and the school system. And people need to be taught that this is fantasy for for everybody's safety, you know, because we're also seeing people watch pornography, or we're hearing about people watch pornography and then they try to do everything that they saw in pornography in real life. And that's just not how that works. I always compare it to like The Bachelor, where, you know, people aren't getting mad at The Bachelor for teaching people unrealistic dating standards, you know, because people understand that it's entertainment. People understand that it's a genre of media that isn't meant to be educational. And the same thing with pornography.
If you take a step back and look beyond the naked people, Pornhub's story is pretty similar to a lot of other early 2000s tech startups. Founded in Montreal by a couple of guys looking to make a buck by moving fast and breaking things, Pornhub disrupted the adult industry, bringing down costs for the consumer at the expense of the actual workers. The company reached extraordinary heights, only to be nearly undone by their own hubris. A lot of people were hurt along the way. Now, the company's left trying to rehabilitate its public image, with new ownership and a new name for good measure. I can't say where it goes from here. ALO still faces lawsuits. Lawsuits that could wind up costing a lot of money. The latest Girls Do Porn class action is seeking at least $10 million in compensatory and punitive damages for each plaintiff. And there are 62 plaintiffs. And towards the end of 2023, federal judges in the U.S. certified two other class actions alleging Pornhub profited off of child sexual abuse material. I asked ALO if it could bear the cost of losing these cases. A spokesperson replied, quote, "We are sympathetic to any victim who has suffered from abuse, which is why we have zero tolerance for illegal material or the bad actors who attempt to upload it. Out of respect for the integrity of court proceedings, our policy is not to comment on ongoing litigation. We look forward to the facts being fully and fairly aired in that forum," end quote. Despite all the negative press, Pornhub still receives billions of visits a month. That attention is the raw material that can continue to be refined into gold. It's hard to predict when or how or even if that attention will migrate somewhere else. OnlyFans and other subscription-style sites provide a more personal relationship with the audience and a more direct line from performers' labor to their paychecks. Authenticity and intimacy seem to be what people are craving now and what they're willing to pay for. It's why I have my doubts about the latest buzz around sexy AI and erotic chatbots. Here's what I do know. Sex has driven the tech advancements that built the internet we know today. So it's a safe bet that whatever the internet will look like in the future is being incubated in the adult industry right now. The porn business is extraordinarily resilient. It's weathered the migrations from cinemas to VHS to the family computer to the smartphone in your pocket. And until our bodies are gone and we're nothing but brains in the cloud, the power of our collective horniness will continue to fuel this industry that eludes every attempt to snuff it out. This has been The Pornhub Empire, Understood. The series was produced by CBC Podcasts and CBC News. The show was written by producer Imogen Burchard and me, Samantha Cole. Associate producer, Sam Connert. Sound design by Julia Whitman with Sam Connert. Sarah Clayton is our digital coordinating producer. Our podcast art was designed by Tara Paquette. Our cross-promo producer is Amanda Cox. Our video producers are Evan Agard and John Lee. Special thanks to Mackenzie Cameron and Damon Fairless. audio from The Howard Stern Show on SiriusXM. Executive producers are Cecil Fernandez, Chris Oak, and Nick McCabe-Locos. And before we go, if you liked this show, try the one you'll find earlier in this feed. It's called The Naked Emperor, and it tells the story of the unlikely rise and spectacular fall of Sam Bankman-Fried and his doomed crypto empire, FTX.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.